You're listening to Foresight, a podcast about making work better. I'm your co-host, Mark Edgar, a former consultant and coach who now works as a chief people officer on a mission to make work more human.
And I'm Naomi Teitelman, a former big firm consultant and HR executive, now striving to make work better one organization and one leader at a time. Every week, we'll discuss the latest trends that are impacting the new world of work to help you be a better leader for the future.
Welcome, everybody, to Foresight, a podcast about making work better. Today, I am excited that I have the opportunity to be joined by my co-host, Naomi.
Hello.
How are you, Naomi?
I'm good, thanks. It's been quite a while since we've done this, Mark, so I'm excited for today's episode as well. I'm good.
I don't know.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Yeah, things are very good in my world, so feeling very happy with everything going on. No complaints. What about you?
Good. It's a good place to be. Yeah, things going pretty well. It's blowing my mind that we're already in at the end of February. Like, it's just completely mind-blowing. And I can't believe, like, the school year ending is right in front of us. And that always is obviously a huge milestone. And I just can't believe how fast this year is flying.
Well, this episode won't be released until end of March. So we'll be even further into the year.
Right. Like, we'll be done with March break already.
Oh, yes. That would be a distant memory.
Yeah.
It's like life flies by. That's why you have to kind of seize every moment and cram in every joyful thing that we can do. So,
yes, exactly. I think that's foreshadowing to one of the articles we're going to chat about today, Mark.
Who knew? So, yeah, that's maybe we'll tee up what we're going to talk about today. And that's a nice lead in to what the check-in is going to be. So we thought, we have an opportunity today. We've been quite busy, the pair of us, getting all geared up for our Foresight Plus community, which is one of the exciting parts of Future Forward. And probably in some ways the newest part, actually. So this is the kind of community, the digital community that gives people the opportunity to connect synchronously and asynchronously, focused on senior HR leaders. So we have a great bunch of people in our community who we love connecting with. And we're busy getting ready for the next cohort, the next group that start in the spring. People start typically in the spring and the autumn. And we had the idea of just giving our audience a bit of a peek behind the curtain, a bit of an opportunity to get a sense of what are some of the things that we share in that community, what are some of the things that we talk about in the community. And we thought we'd do that by giving you a bit of a sense of some of the articles that we share. So what we often do in the community is that members share articles, and we use that article as a bit of a prompt around having a conversation about what's going on in the world, and it generates some really good discussion. So today we thought we'd bring three of those articles into the discussion today in the podcast, and Naomi and I will give our perspective. We'll try not to get into too much detail of what other people have said. Maybe we'll give some of the views of what others have said about these articles, but gives you a sense of what we're all about. So that was the plan, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's the plan. Sounds great.
I think it was your plan, to be fair. So it's a good plan.
Yeah.
So a kind of a related check-in question I thought about was, what's top of your reading list at the moment, Naomi?
It's a good question. So my mind actually went to reading for fun, or for leisure. And my daughter has an assignment this year that she has to read 20 minutes every single night. And I don't have a great reading habit. So it's kind of forced me to also read 20 minutes per night. So I've gotten through quite a few novels this year. And typically, you know, I'm very sporadic about my reading. I usually read on vacation, and then it takes me forever to get through a book. So not on my reading list coming up, but I just read All the Light We Cannot See, which I really, really enjoyed. And ironically, it was also on Netflix at the same time, or one of the streaming services. And I really enjoyed that book very much. So I'd like to read more. And I'm now sharing this with our audience. So now I am going to be held accountable to read more this coming year. What about you, Mark?
Well, good for you. I think I shared a book that I read recently, which was, I read a Stephen King book, which wasn't a scary horror book. So I kind of quite into kind of what he's writing about, or because he has such a back catalogue of stuff. So I'm kind of working through some of his, which is good. Not the scary ones, because I'm a bit of a baby when it comes to things like that, but the more thriller type rather than the horror type. So reading that, I think, to be honest, on the kind of non-fun stuff, I think, like you, it's, you know, today is actually kind of quite an exciting day for us at Foresight, because it's our 200th edition of our newsletter went out today, which we were super proud of that. And I think it made me reminded me that we actually spend a lot of time between us not have to be always reading word for word, but we read a lot of content. We read a lot of kind of HR, kind of business related content every week just to kind of prepare for that, and often find ourselves get kind of pulled in by a decent headline and then realize that the article doesn't actually tell you much, and we move on to the next one. But getting into, perhaps because we've been doing it for 200 episodes now, 200 issues, a good process of reviewing lots of good stuff, and I think getting out some good content. So that keeps me, I think, up to date with what's going on in the world, which is important, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. And a double challenge is finding articles that are meaningful for our community and also not behind a paywall. So we are not fans of sharing articles that are behind a paywall only to frustrate people as they click and then they have to subscribe.
Yes.
So you're welcome. You're welcome, Foresight readers, that we don't do that.
We avoid all paywalls because there are a couple of newsletters where all they do is provide articles from paywalls, which is, I think, part of their plan, isn't it? The sneaky things that they are. It's not really our gig to do that kind of thing. So.
Right. Especially other people's paywalls, like sending people to, Wall Street Journal paywalls, for example.
Exactly. But let's get into it. So we have three articles today that we thought we'd touch on, three quite different ones, but in some ways feel as though they give a good sense of what's going on in the world. So we'll kind of tee the article up, just give it a sense of what it's all about. And then we'll have a bit of a conversation around it. And obviously the links for these articles are in the show notes. So feel free to explore them in more detail there. And as a quick reminder, these were articles that our community members have put into our Foresight Plus community, and there was good discussion around all of these in the communities. So the first one was from Business Insider, and it's an article from mid-February, so a few weeks old now. And it really does an article that picks up the theme of working from home and the impact that can have on layoffs of all things. So it's titled Working from Home. Working from home, remote work has increased layoff risk. The article is, I think, something that's pretty close to our hearts when it comes to thinking about hybrid work and remote work, and essentially is suggesting that a number of companies are perhaps in some ways targeting individuals in organizations if they are in a situation where they're working remotely. So just to read a couple of quotes from the article, many large organizations have recently let people go, and they've made it known that employees who, in the eyes of higher-ups, I love that, the higher-ups, mm-hmm. in the eyes of the higher-ups exist mostly as faceless beings on a computer screen, have a greater chance of getting a pink slip. So a pink slip is a south of the border thing. I don't think we do pink slips everywhere in the world, do we? But essentially being laid off because they are working from home. And it was interesting, those two people that we maybe know. So Peter Capelli, who is a Wharton professor, pretty well regarded, he said, "We might say it's not fair, and that could be true, but there are lots of things that aren't fair, but nevertheless are predictable." So I thought that was interesting. His kind of point of view was, this was always going to happen. Probably should have an expectation that people need to turn up to work, which is something that we would certainly debate. But then I think it was interesting that former podcast guest and one of our favorite people, Nick Bloom, and he referenced in the article proximity bias and the impact that working from home can have on the rates of promotion. So lots of you all know that Nick does a huge amount of research. One particular bit of research showed that people who work from home for 4 days, the promotion rate for that group was halved, so very significantly. So the people who aren't nearby are therefore the people who are going to be identified as being on that list of layoffs. So lots to unpack here, but that's the first article that was posted in Foresight Plus.
Yeah, really interesting. I mean, we do want to get through three articles, so I'm just going to give you like very short snippets of the way I feel. I know,
Naomi, this is one of your favorite topics.
This is my thing.
So I'm restricting to three.
So heads up, I'm getting on a soapbox here. So this is a perfect example of media loves these type of headlines. Like, these type of headlines get lots of clicks and lots of sound bites that I think are actually quite dangerous, of people like reading the title and going around saying, you know, people who work remotely are being targeted for layoffs, which I think is, you know, a lazy way to condense a very much bigger, more complex story. So questions such as, is there a hybrid model? Is there a hybrid culture? And these are people who put their hand up to only work remotely. And then if that's the case, and they're only working remotely when they're expected to be in the office sometimes. And by the way, there's complexity here, because during the pandemic, we hired lots of people remotely different from I've chosen to go and live away from the office is, you know, I've hired you in Santa Fe and now expect you to be in an office in New York City. And I'm just going to let it kind of slowly burn, or the water slowly boil until you leave or until we fire you, which I do not believe is ethical. But at the end of the day, if you're remote, if you're fully remote in a hybrid model and you haven't been granted an exception, or even if you have been granted an exception, you have to manage your career, just like anybody needs to manage their career. And while we'd like to believe that organizations are meritocracies and you just put your head down and you do great work and you get promoted and you get recognized and you're safe, that is very naive to believe. So if you are in a situation where you're working fully remotely, you have to work a lot harder to be present and make sure that you're on people's radars. And by the way, it's much more difficult to develop meaningful relationships when you're fully remote. It's not impossible, but it's more difficult. So you need to keep all these things in mind as you manage your career and you manage how you interact in an organization. So if you do end up on a layoff list, hopefully it's not exclusively because you're remote, but because of all of these factors that come into play. We all know there's politics at play in organizations. That's not a secret. So if you haven't managed that appropriately and haven't built relationships that, you know, end up being your sponsors at the table when these decisions are made, you know, it's not all on the organization to take accountability for that. So that's a snippet of the way I'm seeing this article. Mark, I'm curious to hear what came to mind for you.
To be honest, it wasn't quite where I was expecting you to go with that, I thought. So I think that's interesting, just again, to unpack a little bit. I think your point around this being, I think, really good kind of clickbait for articles, which I think is something that we're always quite conscious of when, as I'm sure everybody is, when you read these sorts of things. I think that the headline catches people's eye, and then you have to read the detail to kind of really understand. And I think, you know, we are seeing a certain number of layoffs in certain sectors at the moment. The article quotes companies like Wayfair and IBM and Dell. The list goes on, and we'll talk about some other tech companies in a future article. And I think it's also, you know, the way in which we're handling these layoffs was also, you know, that got a lot of press as well. There was the viral post of the individual from Cloudflare and how they were being treated, the way in which they were laid off. So it's as much a fact, as you're saying, that we overhired in lots of areas. We took advantage, in inverted commas, of the opportunity for people to work remotely. And then the economy started to turn, the you know, tech companies in particular overhired, and the markets changed, and we're reacting to that. So I think that's maybe the bigger part of it. I wonder, I'm sure at some stage Nick will do the research to understand whether there is a stronger correlation, as the article suggests.
Yeah.
But I think the point I think you made, which I think is really powerful, is that it sounds like it's around individuals have accountability to make sure that proximity bias doesn't become a thing.
Yeah, and totally.
You know, as an individual, as you say, I love the way you say you need to manage your own career. It's your responsibility. And so you don't want to put yourself at risk of being the person that people, that the faceless person, as the article suggests, that people don't kind of recognize. So I think that is really important. But, and, you know, interesting how all these articles, I think, are going to blend into each other, because it perhaps if somebody's not doing that, then that makes you wonder why. And is that around their motivation? Is it around how engaged they are? We talk a lot about sense of belonging. Do they not have a sense of belonging to the organization? So, yeah, what's really going on there for the person to be in that situation where they're not kind of leaning in, they're not trying to make those connections? But, you know, I think it's definitely a two-way thing. The organization needs to have their own, you know, kind of processes and policies and approaches in place to make sure that people do feel connected as well. It takes two to tango, as they say. I think, I know you're not suggesting this, but I don't think all the onus is with the individual. I think it has to sit with the company as well.
Yeah, I think, again, it's back to, is this a fully in-person 5 days a week company and there are exceptions? Or is it a hybrid situation? You know, I hear the most common complaint I hear is I can't get my people to come into the office even 2-3 days a week, right? So if it's a hybrid situation and people are refusing to come into the office, that's different than a fully remote situation or a fully in-person situation. And again, I think the headline is dangerous because it implies that there's nothing in between your remote and you're fired, right? Like, there's lots of nuance between those two things. So I think that's why there's just so much to unpack. And hopefully no company is going down the list and saying you're fully remote and therefore you are fired, right? Like there's so much else at play. And if you're a very strong performer and you happen to be fully remote with an exception, then, you know, hopefully you don't find yourself on that list. I mean, that would be silly for organizations to apply that broad approach, right? I don't know that organizations would do that.
Yeah. It's kind of making sure that they're not making assumptions there, because there's mixed evidence around how performance is impacted by working remotely. So there's definitely not correlations there. And it's then interesting around what is the impact that has in terms of the overall environment of the company when people seem to be making decisions which appear so blunt as that. I mean, years and years ago when we're having to do some of these terrible exercises where you're downsizing and us trying to have as many factors as possible going into consideration. So the last in, first out was always ridiculous. The basing a decision on the fact that somebody works fully remotely is equally ridiculous. So trying to be as balanced as you can around these things and making an informed decision. But it's interesting, maybe just the last point on this one before we move on, just around this kind of proximity bias thing is the bit that seems to have been a bit of a trigger for you. And kind of where would you see the balance of that between an individual and an organization to ensure that that's avoided? And what kind of things could the organization do to avoid proximity bias?
I think it's interesting. I think, again, it depends, right? Like if everybody is working 4 days remotely, then you're not an outlier, right? But if the expectation is that everybody's in the office a few days a week and you're perceived as an outlier, then relationships may erode, right? And I'm not saying they should. I'm just taking human nature into account here. And I think there is some of that. And I think if you are deliberately deciding to be an outlier, then you have to take accountability for your career. Again, like it goes back to you have to manage your own career. So I think it's very different if everybody is working 4 days, then, you know, there's no outlier there.
Right.
But if you are working 4 days remotely and everybody else, the number of days actually really doesn't matter, because if you're in the office 1 day a week and you seem to be in the office 4 days a week, right? Like you're making the rounds, you're being very deliberate about who you're seeing, who you're having coffee with, who you're having lunch with, all that stuff. I'll give an example. When I moved to Canada on my own volition, I was working supporting a group that was entirely in the US, and I'd get meeting invites all the time, like come to my office, and they didn't even know that I was living in Canada. Because every time I went in, I'm like, okay, these are the leaders that I saw last time. These are the leaders I have to see this time. But I was accountable for that, right? Like nobody was coming and telling me, because you're remote, you know, you have to do XYZ. I knew I had relationships was part of the game, and I knew that's how I had to manage. So that's the way I see that. Like, I'm not surprised by the proximity bias. I think it's human nature. But I think, again, it depends on what the norms of the company are and what the expectations of the leader are. And unfortunately, there are leaders who are going to be very literal and manage by badge swipes when we have these types of policies in place, right? And do I think that's the right thing? Absolutely not. But, you know, it not everyone is a wonderful leader also.
No, exactly. Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, I think you're right. It's kind of very, very circumstantial, if that's the right word. I think it does depend. It depends. But I think there are opportunities that, you know, all the situations or all the cases that I've read of companies who are fully remote, I think they are very deliberate of ensuring that you have the opportunities to build relationships, and they have a certain cadence and a structure. And I think the successful ones are even more deliberate and disciplined around what they do to make sure it works and people stay connected, which seems logical. I think it is those situations where you're not fully back in the office. It's the hybrid, and there's differences and there's discrepancies where it can become challenging. And my team is distributed across Canada. We have people who we hired during the pandemic, and then they're close to a branch, but they're not close to any colleagues within the HR team. And we do have to work hard to keep those folks connected. So we find a way of doing it, but it's an extra thing you have to think about, I guess. So I guess it's challenging, but we make it work, and we see the value that brings. So I think, again, it's probably a case of just being very deliberate about it and avoiding trying to avoid these headlines, trying to avoid the kind of cliched way of managing it, which it feels like what this article does for me. It just feels a bit of a, as you say, kind of a bit of a lazy way of, maybe it's a lazy way of thinking about the issue, but maybe to be fair to the journalist or the author of the article, that's because the organizations are thinking about this in a lazy way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure which it is. It's probably somewhere in the middle.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I think, in terms of moving on to the next article, I think there's a bit of a segue here around the sense of how people feel about work and the expectations that they have of work. So this was an article from Toronto Life. It won't necessarily be on all of our listeners' reading lists, but it's always an interesting read. And so again, the link to the article is in the show notes. So one of our community members posted this article, which got us thinking. And so just the headline is pretty compelling. Work less, live more. The 40-hour work week sucks. Ambition is overrated. Life is short. ...
Mm-hmm. I wish we could all live like that.
So it reminded me of listening to your interview with Jacob Morgan in a previous podcast. I think he referenced some of these things, but it's this idea of, you know, essentially the whole, you know, we work hard to play hard. Seems less of a thing these days. People are looking for fewer responsibilities and less stress. We've heard all the phrases. We've spoken to them previously on this podcast, and Jacob did the same. You know, be it quiet quitting, lazy girl jobs, bare minimum Mondays, weekend Wednesdays. I just, you know, it does make you think about, where does all the work get done? I'm also curious what happens on a Tuesday and a Thursday and Friday.
Well, you're in the office. No, you're not in the office on Friday, but you're in the office on Tuesday and Thursday, and therefore getting lots of work done, obviously.
And what about the Bangles song? Wasn't it a manic Monday rather than a minimum Monday?
Right,
what
happened exactly.
To it?
gotta rewrite it for the times.
Yeah, show my age there. And the article shares, yeah, which I always find interesting, we've got kind of real stories, so a bunch of stories from 20 to 30-year-olds. And so I'm just going to read a little bit from one of those stories. So this is a woman called Eunice. She's 36, lives in Pickering, Ontario. Mm-hmm. And so her story briefly, after graduating in 2014 with a degree in liberal studies, I got into the tech space. By 2018, I joined a small crypto startup. I worked my way up and earning $90,000 a year, able to buy a condo, but expected to work constantly. I answered Slack messages in the evenings, not weekends. I didn't take a full day of vacation for more than a year because part of my job involved processing payments twice a day, and no one else really knew how to do that. In July, I lost my job in around a budget-related layoffs and decided to chill. So she, Eunice, eventually found a job, she goes on to say, which she considers to be much more 9-to-5. She has modest expenses. She lives with her mum. She pays her mum rent, which made me feel good because I wonder whether my girls might come back and live with me one day. So I wonder if I can charge them rent. But she's working as an account clerk, but earning much less, but seems a lot happier.
Mm-hmm.
So there's other stories around this, but I'm just curious whether that, you know, what does this mean? I think, again, these articles I find really interesting. I think they're good social media, clickbaity, go viral type stuff. Mm-hmm. In the article, there's somebody who actually built a community around lazy girl jobs, which is referred to in the article. And she admits in the article that she's busier than ever. So there's nothing lazy about the woman who came up with lazy girl jobs, which I thought was interesting. But does Eunice's, I don't know, it's hard to relate to, it's kind of a different situation, but does Eunice's story, I don't know whether that does make her lazy. She's just made choices.
Yeah, I think she's just made choices. I don't think it's lazy. I think ambition means different things to different people. And, you know, this is definitely a thing. Like, I'm definitely hearing more and more of these types of stories now than I did when I was, you know, younger in my career. I do think it's a bit of hangover from the pandemic, saying you only live once, you've taken away, you know, 2 years of my life plus, and I'm going to live it the way I want to live and therefore make decisions around it, right? And if you can pay the bills and, you know, do what you need to do on fewer dollars and you're happy with that, then go for it, right? I think we need to be very aware in organizations that we do have employees who operate in this way, and they're much more transparent about it. I don't know that there are more employees operating this way, actually. Maybe they're just more transparent because social media has made it okay to be more transparent.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think it maybe, or there's more, you know, even the fact that there's more of a channel for those kind of messages, I guess, could be part of it. And I mean, not to, again, unpack her article too much, but I thought it was interesting when she says things like, I answer Slack messages in the evenings and on weekends, didn't take a full day of vacation for more than a year because part of my job involved processing payments twice a day and no one else really did that. Mm-hmm. So in terms of, yeah, that makes me go to, well, you're not, like, well-being perspective as an organization, if you're not allowing somebody or giving somebody an opportunity to take a day's holiday for a year, no wonder she feels as though she has to take time off and chill. That's not the norm. And the fact that from a, you know, job design perspective, there's nobody there to kind of back up her work and to deal with other ways of doing things seems pretty short-sighted as well. So, you know, I I'm sure that is the reality. I mean, I have the benefit of often working in bigger companies where you have more resources and a bit more structure, but, you know, would have been lucky in many ways because of that. But I'm sure there are many organizations where you're so dependent, you can't take holiday. You are, you know, on call essentially, and that expectation is made. But that just feels unrealistic. I don't think that's sustainable in any, for the individual or for the organization.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
And I think it's also, I mean, it goes back to you know, your point of the individual's responsibility. I mean, good on Eunice for making the decision to quit and go, and, well, she got laid off to be fair, but then, you know, deciding to take that time to decide what she wanted to do moving forward.
Yeah.
The last bit on this one is perhaps just the classic one of generational differences, because the article seems to highlight 20 to 30 year olds. You're much nearer to that age range than I am these days. So
Much
nearer. Any thoughts on the generational thing?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I alluded to, you know, in earlier years in my career, what were we experiencing the same thing, right? Like, when we have fewer responsibilities, you know, are we more frivolous about saying, you know, screw it, I'm just going to up and leave and, you know, do my own thing? I don't think we were. I think we did kind of feel the sense of we have to go through, you know, the proper training and the development and, you know, be at a big company. And that was kind of more my crowd's ambition, the people that I was friends with and I met as colleagues. So I do think there's a bit of a time in life piece here for sure, because there's fewer responsibilities and eventually you have to pay big bills and you have to earn money to do that. But I do think there are more ways to do that now in an easier way. I just think people have to be careful that, like, being an Instagram influencer is not necessarily how you're going to earn enough money to pay the bills, right? Like, I think there's a lot out there that's like, oh, I'm just going to put something out there on YouTube or on Instagram and hope that it goes viral. And that's going to be my income. And that's going to be, you know, how I'm going to pay the bills. But I think, I think, you know, without saying when I was your age, I think we just have to be careful that that's not necessarily how a sustainable way of, you know, being able to afford to live.
Yeah, it's just, I think it's, again, very individual. There's lots of different cases, aren't there, and lots of different situations. I think that, you know, somebody asked me a question. I was doing a presentation yesterday to an internal group of leaders, and they asked me about generational differences. So I think it's as much the perceptions we have around those things as the reality. So I, you know, like I've known, I've heard you do before, kind of reminded them that, again, this can be a bit lazy to think about generational labels and to make sure you're really understanding the individual. I've got a bunch of, fortunate to surround myself with a bunch of people who are in their 20 to 30s who are some of the most diligent people that I work with, which gives me a lot of hope for the future. So yeah, I have to be careful with those labels for sure.
Yeah.
But it's a good article. I think it's one to kind of have a read of. And I think it's a good reminder of, as we think about what the changing expectations are of people, a good one to keep in mind. But again, not to read as being the gospel truth in many respects, they're just stories. So a bit of a change of gears here is an article that was, again, from February, and it's in Fast Company, is Zoom laid off its DI team, and it's not the only company making such cuts. So this one is interesting, curious whether they laid off their DI team on Zoom or whether they did it in person, but it doesn't suggest that too much detail there. And this one actually was, rather than just sharing articles in Foresight Plus in the community, we actually get together to have roundtable discussions. And we had a couple of roundtable discussions around this topic of DEI, because there were a fair few articles that were kicking around about this topic. And it's, you know, quite a sensitive topic, I think it's fair to say, and one that we want to make sure that we're kind of doing justice to. In the Zoom case, they've decided to, rather than having a team, an in-house team, to rely more on consultants. They're shifting the focus from DE&I to focus much more on the inclusion part of that. And the article goes on to suggest that they're seeing from other examples, and there's other press around this, that there is a bit of a disinvestment in this kind of work post the tragic George Floyd murder in May of 2020. And the organizations would have done a lot of things on the back of that situation and responded to that, but in many ways have stepped back from it. So yeah, I don't know whether Naomi, you would maybe just share some of the highlights from the conversations that we had within our roundtable.
Yeah, so there are a few things. I'll talk about one thing that I like actually in that model, one thing that I don't like, and one thing that I'm okay with that you might think that I would not like. So firstly, what I like is the focus on inclusion, right? I like the focus on, let's not just spin up a team that focuses on the wrong things. Let's focus on inclusion. I really like that. I'm okay with the fact that they've decided to use the broader ecosystem of workers and not rely on an internal DEI team. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with consultants being, you know, leveraged for their expertise as opposed to a standalone team. Part of what I don't like about this message, again, is the assumption that DEI is less important. So I'm hopeful that in this, you know, shift that we're going through, if we want to bring in consultants instead of having a standalone DEI team, which I'm actually okay with, we need to make sure that there's accountability built into the system in the company so that A, when consultants leave, there's someone who actually drives it forward, and B, there's heavy influence in the organization. So part of it sits in HR, but part of it really doesn't sit in HR. So in my opinion, this belongs like in the chief of staff role in the CEO's office, because they have the ability to manage across, you know, the business units that are developing product and that are, you know, driving operations, et cetera, as well as HR has a piece of accountability for that. And also able to work with consultants in a way that is palatable for their own organization and focuses on their organization's priorities. So I don't think this is something that is fully outsourced to a bunch of consultants, but I'm okay with broadening our lens of the worker ecosystem and saying, okay, I really need to dive deep on this DEI issue and on figuring out what inclusion looks like. And then I actually don't need consultants anymore because it's embedded in what we do in the organization and the accountability sits in a variety of places managed by the chief of staff or CEO. That's kind of my optimistic way of seeing this problem. Mm. What about you? How do you feel about this whole issue?
Yeah, no, I think that's good. I think it's good perspective. I think there's something around how organizations responded to those, you know, say kind of tragic situations, and it, you know, I think it all felt a bit disingenuous. Things that people were kind of reacting to that by creating chief diversity officer roles, hiring, I'm sure, very capable people to come into the organization as a bit of kind of sticky tape in some ways, and a bit of posturing around what they really were intending to do with those things. And it feels like those people, you know, that Zoom did that, as the article explains, they had somebody in that kind of role. Those individuals aren't able to influence the organization the way that was originally kind of expected, which I don't think, as you're saying, kind of should trivialize the work that needs to be done. It's just maybe and it sounds a weird thing to say, but it's perhaps you've got the wrong tool for the job that needs to be done. And I think, yeah, would never claim to be an expert when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion, but I've been involved in enough of the work over the years and seen things that have worked really well and things that haven't worked successfully. And for me, it's around alignment to kind of purpose and values and culture and making sure that's kind of embedded in everything that you do. I like your point around, yeah, let's be aware. We've been strong advocates of this for a long time, of the full worker ecosystem. And if you can leverage a consultant, an expert for these kind of topics, then that seems a really sensible thing to do. Not every organization would have a chief of staff. I think HR does still continue to have a really influential role in this, and I think can lead it. I think we do have in our roles the benefit of being able to look across the whole organization and bring some of that outside in perspective without layering too much into this. You know, I know that you've talked previously around the important role that HR plays when it comes to AI. And there's so much talk of Gen AI at the moment, and that has a lot of implications when it comes to potential discrimination that we're aware of. So to separate out these things would seem that there's risk in that. So that's maybe the only thing I'd think is, you know, I think if you have every organization, I'm sure would have a DEI or however you want to arrange the acronyms kind of agenda. And I think that should be owned by HR with strong buy-in from all leaders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, at the very least, in my opinion, it needs to dotted line to a big business unit with a leader who feels very strongly about this. I think it's very hard to influence.
Idea. Yeah.
You know, I've seen situations where, you know, it sits within HR, but part of the agenda is, you know, customer facing, you know, processes, which, you know, I could maybe suggest what a process should look like to be more inclusive from a customer perspective, but I'm not the expert, nor do I have influence over that. Right. So I think, you know, having a perspective across the entire business and across all stakeholders is really important, right? It's not just an employee thing. It's a customer thing. It's a shareholder thing. It's a vendor thing, right? Like we can't possibly be on top of all vendors, you know, being tested for diversity. So that's why I feel pretty strongly that it needs to, at the very least, dotted line into a business.
Yeah. No, I can see that. Yeah. I guess, again, going back to things I've seen work well, it's whether it's that kind of dual ownership of it in a sense,
and
with HR and a very respected business leader, it's for sure worked well. So was that the bit you agreed with or the bit that you weren't so sure about? What was the...
So the bit that I wasn't a fan of is these sound bites that DEI is dead or DEI is no longer needed or let's get rid of DEI, right? Like that is terrible, and hopefully we're not going in that way. But it sounded like from our roundtables that in fact is not the way most organizations are going. You know, some need to kind of shift their messaging, but the philosophy is still in place. So I'm hopeful that it's not a case of that.
Yeah, that was my recollection from the conversations. We had two conversations with different roundtables on this topic, and it was, you know, almost the exact opposite. It's like, well, we're kind of doubling down on our efforts, and it continues to be kind of really important work. But I think it was interesting. It was organizations perhaps that are thinking about this in a more like long-term, sustainable, this is, you know, I don't know, it's a cliche, but this is a journey type way, rather than it feels like some of the other organizations that have made the headlines have kind of gone from zero to 100 and then back to zero, which feels, you know, pretty short-sighted, I think, and quite damaging, not only for their own reputation, but for the reputation of this important topic. So yeah, no, I was really encouraged by the roundtables. Actually, another way in which I think we find that the community is really helpful for people, it gives you a good perspective and good sense of some of the great work that's going on in our profession, which is always really encouraging. So,
yeah, agreed.
So those are our three articles. So covered a lot of ground there. We had an article thinking obviously about the implications of remote work and layoffs, an article exploring some of the sense of whether people's expectations of work are changing, and then an article about layoffs specifically relating to diversity, equity, and inclusion teams. So I hope it gives you a good sense. All the links are in the show notes. Yeah, take a look and let us know what you think.
Yeah, let us know what you think.
So let's, as always, we'll end on the feel good. Naomi, what are you feeling good about these days?
I am feeling good because by the time this episode airs, I will have spent some time with the family in Florida. So I'm feeling very good about the ability to do that with my family and enjoy some time off. What about you, Mark? Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't have to worry about March break quite so much these days because kids are a bit older. So yeah, I'm not quite sure what we'll be doing towards the end of the March when this goes live. I think in terms of, you know, it continues to be a balance, but I think we've got, by this stage, we would have launched our new website and our new branding, which is an evolution of the branding that we've had for a while, our new look newsletter. And so yeah, just kind of really excited about what that holds for us moving forward. I think many of our listeners will know, we started this as a bit of a side hustle back in 2016 with an event, which has now evolved into an opportunity to really, I think, make a big impact on the way that people think about making work better. And having all of the right collateral and resources and telling that story has been a fun a fun few weeks getting all that set. So yeah, excited about that work and proud of what we've done together.
Yeah, great, great one. And we're also a little bit of a plug launching our spring cohorts in just a couple of weeks. So there's still time to express your interest if you'd like to join.
Yeah, we'll put the link in. If you are inspired by having these sorts of conversations with other people, not just Naomi and I, about some of the latest trends, then do join the Express Interest and learn more about the community. But we'll leave it there. Thank you for listening to Foresight. Please do give us a review. It's always appreciated. Share it with a friend. Let us know what you think. Great to connect, Naomi. We must do this more often, and speak to you soon.
Great. Take care, everyone. Thanks for listening to Foresight. If you enjoyed the episode, we would love to hear from you. Leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Your ratings and reviews also help more people like you find our show so that we can reach more future forward leaders and achieve our mission of making work better.
Follow us on Instagram and LinkedIn at Future Forward, and sign up for our weekly newsletter, Foresight, on our website, futureforward.com.
That's FutureForward.com, where we share even more about the new world of work.
Talk to you next week.